substance equals spurn. The propaganda's a win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Words are now displayed with good intentions.
I want people to send me the Rainbow Warrior conspiracy theories, because for a long time, the bio on my Twitter has said number one Rainbow Warrior truther account. But nobody's ever followed up on it. And I'm quite disappointed by that. Although one time I used to be a quiz master and I was in a pub and there was a question which came up about the Rainbow Warrior. And at the end of the question, it, you know, gives the basic facts, 1981, whatever it is, blah, blah, blah. And then I said, allegedly, over the microphone. And during the break, a man came up to me and he had ideas and he had theories and he had notions, let me tell you, Kyle. And I can't remember what they were because I was in shock, but I thought maybe I should take it out of my bio. These people actually exist.
That's amazing.
Welcome to one of 200. Thank you for that fantastic anecdote, Simon. And if you're listening to this and you do have some interesting facts that you want to share about the Rainbow Warrior, hit Simon up on Twitter.
Live your truth.
He'll listen. Well, he'll read it. Don't send him audio clips. That's going to become terrible. We are the Independent and Politics and Media podcast, back again for another current events. I'm getting sick of saying everything is getting awfuler, but it is. It's not. Things aren't slowing down. Any opposition to this government continues to be aesthetic, it feels like. Like someone's kind of put up a play fort to attempt to fight back against what is happening within our institutions. Everything's getting dismantled, even beyond the public service. I think one of the big pieces of news, and we're going to cover it right now, has been that News Hub now has a closure date, July 5. Everything's gone. Website's gone. TV reporting's gone. A group of journalists from within the organization went to leadership and were like, hey, we could run this on the cheap. And Warner Brothers said, nah, just still lose this money. Fuck you. And that's not good. TVNZ confirmed that Sunday's going this week as well. That was on the cards the entire time. Why would we need investigative journalists and investigative programs during the course of this government? I couldn't tell you. Why do we want accountability? No, we don't, actually. And it's getting very hard to consider it as anything other than intent from the capital class to aid the terraforming of New Zealand into something fucking horrible.
Why would the executives of Warner Brothers betray their close personal friend, John Key? They even came over here to dismantle our Hobbit laws, Kyle. They care about New Zealanders. I don't believe that this is true. No, it is, dark times, right? Like, you just laying it all out like that. It's like, this is being cut, this news press thing is being cut. New Zealand is such a small country that I think we don't really have much. We effectively have, I mean, it's really like two television news kind of stations, right? And we have RNZ, and RNZ was supposed to consider, I don't want to say pivoting to video because that sounds like a tech thing, but to consider having some form of public service television ambit, right? And that was on the cards for a little bit, but it's been kind of undermined for a while. And I think in some ways we have now found out the why. And it's not only because for whatever its faults and its flaws and, you know, manufacturing consent and so forth, that the news media, at the very least, and even from a horse race politics perspective, does like to get digs at whatever the current government is. If it smells blood in the water, a scandal is always viewers' eyes, and that means advertising dollars. And therefore, they will go after some information if there is blood in the water, right? And there is so much with this current government. And even not only that, but the flow of basic information itself is a kind of threat, because if people have information about what the government is doing, then they might oppose it, they might resist it, they might form some form of organized resistance. And so I think that's the reason why there are these shock and awe tactics, and this is the reason why it's being kind of dismantled, right? But we also know one of the less, not to say conspiratorial, but rather kind of larger structural class-based reasons We know the more specific business-based reasons, and that's because Murdoch Media people have been seen swarming like ants through the National Party and being in discussions. So it seems as if a market that he couldn't quite crack, or there wasn't economies of scale to crack before, which is New Zealand, where they had previously prevented Rupert Murdoch from getting a toehold here. That appears to have changed, and part of that is destroying and dismantling the competition, right? And I wonder if you, or really anybody here, wanted to talk about the effects of what the playbook is really for Murdoch Media, because it's been replicated overseas in the UK and the US, right? So if somebody wants to speak to that, you know, the particulars
really
of what we can come to expect.
It's really bad. Big shout out to John, who was on the podcast a little over a month ago and predicted this very thing. Said, hey, wouldn't it be a great opportunity for Murdoch to come in and save the day? Wouldn't that be fantastic for a whole bunch of media workers to be indebted and employed by Murdoch Media as it finally enters into New Zealand again? Yeah, as you said, they're swarming through the National Party at the moment. Apparently a top executive was meeting with the Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon, this week. It's just so barefaced. It is so clear what is happening here. The constant, what's the word, attacks, I'll just say, because it's generic, on media by right-wing politicians, the failure of the current government to do anything to help our news media, if not being outright antagonistic with them. The broadcasting minister this week, just, I don't know what to call what she did on camera when she was being asked about it. I think it boiled down to, you can ask me the question. I'm not going to answer. You can print what you want, but it won't be the facts because I'm not answering your question. Also, I'm not going to be able to save any media, which is just wild. Jenny, do you want to take a swing at Murdoch? You've worked in different media environments across the kind of Western world.
I wanted to talk a little bit, actually. I wanted to focus on the exec, which people are saying is the one that met with the National Party. And that's Paul Whittaker. He is essentially what I would say, he's Australian, just for some context. Sorry if you're Australian, but I feel like that is a character flag for some of us. But essentially, Paul Whittaker, I think he's been the chief executive at Sky News Australia, which basically means that his bread and butter is just trading in entirely incredibly conservative commentary 24/7, right? Like, it's just always on all the time, water's making my frogs gay type stuff. And apparently, Paul Whittaker and Greg Sheridan were the people that met with Chris, allegedly. It has not been confirmed yet, but this is sort of what's been floating around in the media sphere as to who would be meeting with him. And just for some also context in terms of the general shift that News Corp has been doing. So News Corp, especially in Sydney, as an organization, has been trying to partner with, I would say, companies or orgs that are seen as progressive in the media space. Putting on things like workshops, putting on things like conferences, things that address, I would say, hot button topics to appease a liberal leaning Sydney type sort. So we're talking like migrants, diversity studies, stuff that you wouldn't normally associate with News Corp and its consumer base. And we've been seeing this as a trend in the media space, I would say, in the agency space, being asked for work like this from agencies that we would consider to be more conservative. And it's been happening for about a year or so in like the Sydney, Melbourne spaces. We joked about it actually a while ago. We were like, wouldn't it be funny if it was because they were going to use it as a launching off point to return to New Zealand? And then obviously at the office where I work, when the news broke out that this was sort of happening, we were like, oh, maybe this is actually what's been going on. And just for some context, in terms of what Paul Whittaker's goals might be, this is a guy who was profiled by the AFR not so long ago. And he essentially is, if you think about how aggressive the changes were at places like NZME and places like Stuff in the past couple of years, and you were thinking, how are people making these financial decisions? What are they making these decisions based on? Whittaker makes those people look pretty much toothless. He has an incredibly aggressive style when it comes to commercial cuts. He is incredibly aggressive when it comes to company politics. And he essentially, what's the word? He is the person that people in the industry say is essentially turning Sky News Australia into Fox News America. Like, I'm just painting the landscape of the person that is supposedly met with our officials here to give you an idea of the kind of material that he'd be bringing to the table if, in some unholy future, there is a, I guess, a savior of New Zealand media that ends up being Murdoch News. So here is where my issue is that if you look up stuff about Paul Whitaker, so much of stuff about Paul Whitaker online pre his career with Sky News and pre his Murdoch association is stuff written by Paul Whitaker. So it has that classic smell of like, trust me, I'm the guy that said that I did this. Here are my 12 sources, all the stuff that I wrote about myself. So not to be hyperbolic here, but if you think about the idea of the white man failing upwards, I think honestly it's just sort of crystallized in Paul Whitaker in the media space. And this is not to say, this is not to deride him and make him seem like he is not a threat, because I do think that people like Paul Whitaker are huge threats to the local media environments that they come into. But like, it's just, I'm not deriding him because I think he's like a worm who can't do anything. I just honestly feel like there is so little known about these figures before they rise to prominence as executives. And like, these are just people that just never get told no. But I'm sure that if you dig back through maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 years of Paul Whitaker's irresponsible internet usage, there's gonna be some stuff in there that will make him an incompatible candidate for the kind of work that you would like to see happen in the New Zealand media space. So further to what you said earlier and what Simon was saying earlier, this is the kind of person that you can dig up dirt on like that. This is the kind of guy who self references or calls himself part of the Gold Coast media mafia. Like, if you're using these words to describe yourself, I think that that's a certain level of like, I'm above it, I'm above reprimand, that sort of thing. And people like this have dirt that can be found like that. And so, to Simon's point, I really do think that this entrance, we always see a couple of things, I suppose, like herald the entrance of conservative news into a country officially, right? From outside sources, like the four horsemen of the apocalypse type stuff. We always see like conservative news media. We see local news media who are like, I would say, bought and paid freelancers in the centrist space pave the way, right? It's like you create initially, step one is always like a campaign of like, return to rationalism. Here's how we can, like, here's outlets that report the real truth. Here's why we can't trust existing media, right? It's to oust trust and to destabilize trust in local media. That's
Wait,
always
it's
step one.
astroturfing? You mean these people don't really believe what they're
I
writing?
know, crazy, right? That's always step one, astroturfing. And then step two is basically allowing the dust to settle, right? You need the country or the place that's being affected to feel the absence of news media. We need to feel like how much we need to remember how much we benefit from those spaces and have to fear what we're going to lose. So there'll just be like a dearth of good journalism, basically. There'll be people in the country or the org who are actively hostile to those who want to practice good journalism. And that creates the environment that we're in now. I feel like we're in the stage two part where we're like, here's what we're going to lose. Here's what we have lost. Here's what we are losing immediately. And we're freaking out. We're like, where are the sources? What's going to happen? And people are less concerned, I think, at the moment about getting good quality news is getting access to news at all, right? That's stage two. Stage three is where we see people like Sky News, Murdoch Media. They're like, oh, hey, guys, I heard you wanted some news. We have some news. And at this point, we're like, great. We love news. We need news. Without news, we can't run democracy. And that's going to be terrible. But we don't ever really stop to ask in the acquisition stage, in the tender stage, is your news any fucking good? Because we've got none now. We've lost it. And the people are crying out for it. So we're like, fine, we'll run your news, even if it says the water makes the frogs gay. It's fucking news. You know, before that, there was no news. So that's stage three. And then stage four essentially is when these people come in and they do their thing. So we saw it with Murdoch Media in Australia. I think they own something like what, like 65% of all papers now, which to me is just like insanity. But that's what will happen is they'll start buying up local papers and changing them. And one thing I want to say about Murdoch Media is that historically, a lot of their media outlets don't perform on like a digital scale. Like they are catering to a very, very specific, we'll still get a paper copy of the paper every day kind of reader. So if you think about how that works in like the digital landscape and like the lack of demand for digital, these people are not making money off digital subs, they're doing off digital advertising, which means that when you buy over an outlet, you are basically turning, I guess, like a known brand name into like an advertising reel for the rest of your company to fund the rest of it, which is like pen and paper news, because that's where your core conservative readership audience is. And so eventually you start to see this decline where anything that's available and accessible immediately online isn't worth much. It's all just advertising and all like the quality reading and writing and editing that goes into these paper Herald style, broadsheets, which I would say have a declining readership amongst people that have an invested interest in changing the way the country is, and have a rising readership in those who don't really just give a shit. And so that's basically how media literacy for the news slowly dies in the country after a corporation comes and takes it over. So sorry for that really bleak four-step parter, but that's what we've seen obviously in the UK, we've seen it in Australia, and I'm honestly really feeling like we're in the middle of it now in New Zealand.
Yeah, and like thank you for that, and especially for the context around how this works, I guess, at a corporate level. I think that also leaves some interesting threads hanging as well around some of the big organizations here, like Stuff, who've started to intro AI into their digital space, which is dumb and also stupid. And it really, you really, man, about to get on my conspiracy fucking, what do I get on? My conspiracy high horse, my conspiracy podium.
Yeah, podium, I feel.
And say there's certainly some level of coordination across corporate media leadership here to pave the way, because there's no one doing stuff good. It's bad. It's all bad. What's going to be really horrible is when everyone's like, oh, I'm not going to save NewsHub, and they come in and snap up Reality Check Radio instead, because that's part of that same kind of thing, right? Like Reality Check Radio, who started out as like this free speech kind of branding, and then started openly hosting interviews with known white supremacists, including the guy who was quoted by the Christchurch shooter. This is a direction that people, shadowy figures, not so shadowy, just the forces of capital, have been trying to interest into the market. And Reality Check even shuttered the other week as well, because they ran out of the donations or money or whatever. I mean, it's a piece of shit. Of course they did. But I think mainly it's because they've served their purpose on some level. They've a range of other media organizations like NZME have created products to try and capture that audience, like ZB Plus. The platform continues to exist and has already started drawing politicians from across the spectrum. No, that's not true. I mean, Labour is basically in the same part of the spectrum as National. Who am I kidding? And he's backed by a millionaire, so that can keep running regardless. But having outliers like Counterspin and Reality Check Radio made the platform look less outrageous, and made the platform more like a centrist choice as far as such things go. This will be the thinking of the horrible little pollster goblins in the Labour leader's office. Oh, you have to go on the platform because you have to try and reach those people. I don't think that's the place to be doing it, folks. Go and knock some fucking doors. Is that media? Are we done with media?
Is there anything else to talk about? Anything else that's happened in the past 4 hours or 5 hours? I feel like every 8 hours is a new fresh hell. So, do we want to check news real quick to make sure that nothing has
Don't think
happened?
anything else has happened yet. Maybe we're waiting for the midday news release. I guess the other thing to keep in mind as well is that basically all New Zealand media have continued to fail on reporting Gaza. Like, things aren't good in the New Zealand media industry. They are very, very bad, and that is largely down to who is leading in that space. You have got some very, very nasty people. I tweeted about this again this week. There are just some incredibly reactionary, can I say evil? I'm just going to call them evil, people who hold power in these organizations. And you can see that in the outcomes of what does and doesn't get covered and how many opinion slots they give to TERFs, for example, or to pro-Israel genocide champions.
Which, the Venn diagram of that is almost a circle.
Yeah, it is absolutely ludicrous. And anyone who tracks this stuff can see that this is, I can't say, I wouldn't say bought and paid for, because I think this is self-selecting on some level. People don't need to be paid. But there is a playbook of this is our issue, this is how we're going to front on it. And so you'll get a whole bunch of people in your social media who are attacking you when you make a post about Gaza. And you go on to see, oh, is this a bot? What, who is this person? And half this stuff will be retweets of the most vile anti-trans, anti-gay, anti-drag is the big one at the moment, rhetoric from out of the States in the UK. You're like, where is this person from? Who is this? But there doesn't need to be a reason for why they believe all these things. There doesn't have to be coherency. This is just what they do. And this is what they believe. And that goes all the way up. That goes all the way up to the top. And let's stop pretending that it doesn't. Let's stop pretending that our institutions can't be entryist, can't be hijacked by the people who have the power. That is the purpose of these kind of institutions, is to allow that to happen. It is why we have top-down hierarchies. And so people with power can do what they want and get the people who work for them to do what they want as well. And it's not a conspiracy. That's just how it fucking works. On anti-trans news, the CAST report came out in the UK. People have been worried about this for a while. It's been ongoing. The UK, as always, a hotbed of horrible reactionary bullshit. Finlay, did you want to give us the spiel about how fucked this is?
Yeah, I guess it's there's so much to go through, but essentially, it's been going for I want to say a couple of years maybe that this review has been going through of gender affirming care under the or within the NHS. Specifically, it seems to primarily be looking at care for young people, and basically this quote unquote independent review was full of people who have been, advocating for conversion therapy or like gender exploratory therapy, and consulting with people like DeSantis in Florida, and essentially throughout all of the evidence supporting the use of specifically puberty blockers to basically kind of further what's already happening, I guess, in the UK, where they are trying to prevent as many people as possible from transitioning. Like the it comes from a viewpoint that, like they will, kind of acknowledges this in the report, like there'll be some people for who like medical transition is necessary, but like they're going to do everything they can to make sure that everything else is tried first, which in reality means, yeah, it's that means preventing people from accessing it and, going through these therapies, which are essentially intended to make you decide that you're now cis. And yeah, it's fucked. It's all like it's terribly done. They have it's like if you look at what is in it is, I mean, it's ludicrous. Like their concerns about things like social transition, which they define as like how you dress and maybe use of like changing your name or your pronouns, and like what toys kids play with, and saying like, well, if we allow children to socially transition, maybe they'll medically transition later. So we've got to be really careful about this. They suggested that, I guess they described them as like girls with gender dysphoria might be caused by online pornography use, and so we have to be careful what kind of pornography people are watching. Like it's all kind of bullshit, but I think I'm struggling to, I don't remember who it was that said it, but like it's not really, I think it's not really meant to be read by anyone. The point is to have this thing that says, oh, maybe we shouldn't be prescribing these things as much as we are. And now, transphobes have a thing that they can point to that says, well, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. And the fact that it is all transphobic nonsense doesn't really matter. And you know, both political major political parties in the UK have decided to stand by it. I know that Bob Mikulski said his last name, Family First guy, and Brian Tamaki have both said, like, hey, look at this. This is what we need to, you know, we need to bring this into what we're doing here. And I think we are in a much better place for trans healthcare here than we are than the UK. But I think that, like, that is, with or without this report, probably going to be under threat, particularly in terms of cuts, and like funding cuts. I think that's something that hasn't really been targeted specifically. But I think that there is a real risk that people are like, hey, we're funding all of this care. I think at the moment, like, people like Family First and Destiny are like maybe not smart enough to pivot the message to something that will play better with New Zealanders. So they're doing a very like evangelical kind of like fundamentalist Christian kind of approach, which for a country that's like 40 something percent atheist generally is not going to get you that far. But yeah, I think there is a real risk that they will find a way to make it work, especially with this government, with, you know, who is actually in charge.
They don't need to find a way to pivot because Radio New Zealand will do it for them.
That's true.
Releasing a, I guess, a news article in the last couple of days, which just failed to pick up any of these issues with the CAS report, which are all incredibly clear. I want to be, I have perused it. I have read reviews of it. It is a terrible review and report. It is thrown out so many of like just the correct ways of doing this kind of thing. I'll read the kind of exec summary from the review of the report by Transactual UK. They say the CAS report is fundamentally flawed. It undermines legal competence around medical treatment, ignores complexities in medical ethics, and dismisses almost all existing clinical evidence on trans people's healthcare. Underpinning this report is the idea that being trans is an undesirable outcome rather than a natural facet of human diversity. Sounds bad to me. There's a couple of other just like absolutely bizarre things that happen in concert with this. One is that the report is kind of trying to do this incredibly fumbled sleight of hand, which increases the age of kind of youth healthcare to 25. So one of the constant bad faith anti-trans attacks has been, oh, children can't make decisions. Children can't make important decisions like this. And what they've tried to do in this case is say, oh, but your brain's not really finished. You haven't really got a full brain until you're in your mid-20s. So maybe we just need to keep that in mind. Really nasty and very obvious way to try and preclude healthcare for just to, for a decade longer than what they'd been trying to do previously. And the other thing is that the NHS just fucking jumped before the report even came out. They just started cutting stuff and like removing funding, I think up to a month before the report came out. This is
Oh,
very
shit.
clearly coordinated across kind of different levels of leadership and decision making in the UK. And as you said, it's not a report that's meant to be read. It is a rubber stamp. It is an expensive, takes too long rubber stamp for people to point out and say, and you'll have seen this already across social media. Oh, but why haven't you read this independent review? This independent review says this. It's a cipher. It is something to kibosh people with. It's a way to win the argument. But anyone who has had the briefest look at this and doesn't see it for the utter garbage that it is kidding themselves at best. It's horrific. I think you're right around New Zealand trying to, some people in New Zealand trying to piggyback off this as well. And we've already seen again on the back of the RNZ report. Thanks, fuckers. Oh, the government's not saying whether or not it will do this. Why are you even asking? This report and the moves by the NHS have taken them out of line with every other, well, almost every other Western country. So why should we look to that and not the evidence of the years and years of evidence and the way it is working well in other countries right now? Why isn't that the premise? Yeah, incredibly frustrating stuff.
Yeah, and it's, I guess, frustrating that it's happening. This is kind of going back to what you mentioned earlier. You know, we have had very recently Chris Hipkins go on the platform to talk about how maybe we do need to have a debate about trans issues. And, you know, in the midst of the interview, misgendering Chanel Lal, who works for. I guess not him. I don't know how. You know, who is.
Chenille is also in the Leader of the Opposition's office. I believe that's where they work.
Yeah, it seems like, I guess in general, both Labour and National are looking to the UK, which is a disaster, to say, ah, this is how we both need to be doing things. And I think that's pretty bad for society.
Yeah, and I think it's something we're going to see we're just going to see more and more until the opposition really steps up and starts punishing this government and their kind of reactionary cohort out there for what they're doing. But it doesn't feel like any of the electoral parties really have a grip on how to do that just yet. You know, there's some nice words out there. Greens have done a couple of good press releases. There's some good stuff being talked about, but yo, like it's time to hit the streets, folks. This stuff's gonna get really, really bad. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the strategy is meant to be. And you worry that that's because for more centrist parties like Labour, the strategy is just to fall in line as they have in the UK.
I think perhaps what's not nice to think about, but is probably true, is that so long as certain demographics like queer people can be useful for votes for Labour, or there is enough like public sentiment where being openly against queer people is a bit of an ick for other voters, that they'll continue to quote unquote service them in some way, right? But once that begins to become less popular, once they think, well, we don't need these people, then happy to throw them under the bus. They don't want to look like they're doing it, but they will. And they won't stand up for queer people. So I think what we were talking about at the very start before my computer froze and I cut out for 30 minutes, is that if Fox News type media comes here and we see what we talked about, you know, a couple of weeks ago or so about, you know, what falsely gets called a culture war, these sort of attacks on minority demographics in order to try to funnel in fascistic worldview, gains more of a foothold and more of a foundation here in terms of public discourse, and you widen those cracks a little bit, then suddenly I think we'll begin to see that New Zealand Labour begins to look a lot more like UK Labour, because it's already had its entryist moment, right? Like the kind of the entryism of right wingers who despise everything that Labour is supposed to stand for and all of its values happened through the 80s. Everybody who's currently staffing the Labour Party is either like too stupid to know that the party is a right-wing party, or they are people who do know and then they pretend otherwise for the purposes of their own advancing their own careers so they can get a plum position in parliament, or perhaps they can stand their favorite football team, you know, whatever the equivalent is for politics, that kind of thing, where it like makes people feel like they're morally good to vote for Labour or whatever the hell reason they have, or be involved in door knocking or something like that. But in either case, you know, it's not a party which stands for anything which constitution claims to stand for. Not only that, it's not a party where, I mean, even the UK Labour Party had some form of democratic base where the party had a mass membership, which would then vote on particular things, which funnels upward into how the Parliamentary Labour Party operates,
Had
right?
been the operative word.
So the entryism was a lot more difficult. But in New Zealand, we have what I suppose Geoffrey Palmer calls cadre parties, and the Labour Party, you know, notwithstanding the Greens and Te Pāti Māori, right? Like those are a bit of a separate case. But by and large, every party in New Zealand, you know, National Labour Act, so on and so forth, these are all parties where they don't have a mass membership where the will of the party kind of flows upward into the parliamentary representatives. So the entryism happened very quickly in the 80s, and it has just persisted. It's just a kind of cushy plum job for student politicians and various people who want to go on to like better positions in NGOs or in the UN or whatever later on go on to do. And they don't believe in anything that you think that they ought to believe in, given the socialist beginnings of the Labour Party or anything which it claims to stand for. They just don't. So at the moment that you see that it becomes inconvenient to support queer people and stand with them, Or conversely, where they think they can gin up votes by attacking queer people, you'll see Labour doing it
It's
with ferocious speed.
one of those things where, everyone's like, how did these people end up in Parliament when they're talking about ACT or New Zealand First MPs in particular, like Casey Costello, ex-Hobson's Pledge, I think ex-Tobacco as well. Like, how did we have an MP? Like, this is how this country operates. Like, have you seen Shane Jones? He's been in Parliament before, like, this guy is clearly corrupt, taking money from different industries and creating policy that benefits them. Oh, how do we get a gun lobbyist? Yeah, same difference. How do we get a pharmaceuticals lobbyist? Same difference. It is rife. And National and Labour, I think, hide it better because they're bigger parties, so those people can kind of just drop into the background. And they, as you say, they put a student politician like Chris Hipkins at the top of it to draw all the eyes, but it's the same group of people, just less extreme for now. And this particular government, it's just going fully off the rails with the things it's beginning to implement. It's absolutely wild, but it was always a risk. It was always a risk of doing democracy in this way. One of the more recent ones that happened this week is Shane Jones removed protections for one of the most endangered seals in the world. I don't know what you can do with that. The intent is to fuck us off. The intent is to say, look, we're gonna kill things. We're gonna kill things, and we're gonna have fun doing it. And fuck
You
you.
triggered, libs.
Yeah, but it is. It's just to trigger us.
Yeah, so listen, when a national, but when a young Nat asks you to quote unquote go out clubbing, just be very careful from now on, because they might be talking about a baby seal.
We like, I think this week, last week, just had the ban on some of that fish exports to the US lifted, which was initially banned because basically we're not really doing anything to save the Maui dolphin, which is incredibly, incredibly endangered. And it was only lifted because our marine mammal protections were the same as the states. And like, so we're changing those protections now, right? And this government seemed to think that, I mean, not just this government, previous governments have it as well, but that there's never going to be any consequences for the way that we as a country are treating the environment, whether it's to do with specific endangered species or to do with our emissions. Like, there's this real belief that, okay, we know that everybody else in the OECD at least is like has reduced their emissions more than us, I believe. Like, and a lot of our trade deals with the EU in particular really depend on what we do with this. And there seems to be a belief that it's like, it's fine. Like, they'll just, we're just down here. We're very small. Nobody notices us. But like, we can't keep doing that forever because everybody is going to get fucking pissed off at us, which is fair, and they should.
It's in some of
Like,
the deals. Everyone was crying about these. Labour was like, we got this UK and EU trade deal. And then National came in like, oh, these are our EU and UK trade deals. But a lot of the export rules require us to have environmental protections and be up to standard, both in amounts of emissions, the way that we farm, and you mentioned marine protections as well. Where are we going to be able to send this stuff? Because they won't take it. We can have this trade deal. They won't take our produce. It's just, I don't know what the thinking is here. The other thing they're planning to do, although there's a bit more pressure on this because it's a bit more egregious, is bring back live exports, which are fucking foul. Which is basically, we'll put a bunch of live animals on a plane and fly them out to wherever and kill a whole bunch and cause them a lot of stress along the way. Like, yeah, I don't know what, no one makes money out of this in the long term, and the country certainly doesn't. So I don't know, maybe it's a forced attempt at trying to sink our agriculture industry so that we have to have an economic transition towards something else. Like, the only way we're going to be able to do this, sorry, we're too in with the farmers' lobby. We actually have to destroy them by stealth so that New Zealand can survive climate change.
The big agribusiness has the same kind of both relations of production and also the same kind of outcomes in terms of its aims and its goals and its external necessities in terms of production as any other form of industry, right? So, you have this kind of tendency of the rate of profit to fall, and so they have to expand the frontiers, or they have to make feed worse, or they have to try and kind of profit becomes the central driving force and is the main way of the main thing that is pursued. And so, I mean, if we look at the structure of how property works and how agriculture works, even for, quote unquote family farms, they have share amounts and certain amounts of shareholders and so on and so forth. But agribusiness, like much larger agribusiness, operates the same way as really any sort of industry, whether it be mining, whether that be factories, or ultimately it is subject to the same both physical limitations and economic limitations of the capitalist mode of production. Right, which was foreign to this country before it was imposed on it by force and by terror, and it means that when people talk about farmers, what they imagine they're talking about is farm hands and workers who are going out and milking. But what they actually mean is people who are owners who might have some foot in that world, but by and large they're the same as like city suits, right? They're the same as people who are financiers. It's the same sort of class structure. And I think you might say, well, don't they see what they're doing long term? But that's true of anybody who is in any sort of industry right now. Like the way that capitalism itself is structured is driving the entire earth off the edge into the abyss of oblivion. The mode of production and the way in which we have structured global class relations is destroying the possibility of organized human life on this earth. And you might say, don't they see that? Yes, but they are personally enriching themselves on the way down, so it doesn't matter. They don't give a fuck. You need to understand that. Sorry, I'm not angry at everybody on this podcast. I'm talking to people who are listening. Like,
I
if you think, why wouldn't
was
this be, why wouldn't this undermine their own position, 30 years from now, 40 years from now, 50 years from now? It does not matter to them, and you don't matter to them. One of the big propagandistic slogans that gets employed by people who are in agribusinesses, we feed this country, you should be grateful to us. Then why are people starving? Why are there people who are sleeping in their cars, who have to shoplift from Countdown to get food to their kids' mouths? Why is that the case if you're feeding this country? If we have such a glut, if you're so good at your job, if what you really cared about was meeting human need, and not enriching your own personal pockets and lining them with gold. If that was the purpose, why are you doing such a poor job of it? Are you just bad at it? And the answer is no, it's just propaganda. Because farmers don't feed this country, they export and obtain profit. That's what it is. They are landowners, they're a new landed gentry. And that was the case, that largely throughout the South Island in the 19th century. But increasingly today, we see like not only a concentration into property being just the form of wealth in New Zealand, the form of security in New Zealand, and the parasitism that results from that, rentier class persons like landlords, but also of any sort of industry itself. Every industry is becoming the same thing. It's all becoming financialized. It's all becoming the same thing as what, tech bros like to talk about. Everything is becoming the same because it all ends up funneling toward the same narrow point, and that point is death.
But what if it's mum and dads who are in charge of that process?
Nobody who has had offspring can be a bad person, Kyle. Nobody who has ever given birth to a human being can have done evil. We know that factually. That's why and something that just kind of bothers me is I just kind of connected up that this really is a much kinder, cuddlier, more corporatized version of blood and soil nationalism and the Volksreich, right? And it ties in very well with Lebensraum and with settler colonialism. And I
Oh,
think that the
absolutely.
notion that if somebody who is a mum and dad is beyond reproach because they are the kind of Aryan ideal and the nuclear family is this kind of ideal, then I think the nationalism that is being promoted by that is much more insidious than we would like to think. I love to leave it in a positive note. You know that?
I mean, this is the other thing that's happening in the landlord space as well, right? Is that reference to mum and dad landlords, just outright lies by Christopher Bishop.
What?
You would
Yeah, who
lie?
could have guessed?
Wow. Like,
Former tobacco
but
lobbyist Chris Bishop.
At the same time, like, you know, we have this fast track process, which we're talking about every week now. There's a company, what was it called? It was a seabed mining company. And they're like, we were personally asked to request fast track and bump their share price. And the NZX had to freeze trading because they just fucking lied about it. It was a generic letter. Although it does turn out that Chris Bishop did send out letters to a bunch of people to get in with quick fast track applications, but he won't tell anyone who they are. Wow. Great transparency you've got
They go to
there.
another school,
It's.
Kyle.
Oh, right. I wonder which one.
And speaking of, I mean, I think we'll see that personal enrichment, right? Like, if they can show that share prices are going to spike when people say, yes, we are on the inside track to get approved under this fast track bill, then I think we're going to see a lot more kind of stock manipulation, a
Oh,
lot more
absolutely.
insider trading. We'll see the kinds of things that is done regularly with US Congress, and that will become normal here. We'll,
At least over there you can see it happening. But here, like, they could be doing this and we will never know because of our weird, like, way that we treat trusts in the media and I guess in law.
Yeah, I mean, they call it jobs for mates. I think this kind of vast transfer, not only of the infrastructure that has been paid for through the blood, sweat, tears, and labor of the public, but also through, literal taxpayer money, as it's sometimes called, or as I prefer to call it, public money, is being handed over to the private sector since it's been kind of, matured somewhat through the last few decades, also under some kind of austerity, but nevertheless within some kind of form of public control. That all being handed over in a vast kind of giveaway and a vast kind of increased concentration of private control and wealth over the country. We are also seeing it. I mean, we've talked about before, I think, I don't know if you already mentioned this, but in education with the Charter Schools Board, has that been brought up?
No, we haven't talked about that.
No, giving people who sit on this board who are going to consider, ruling over the charter schools, sorry, consider the charter schools policy for the national government, $4,500 a day. That's not just mates for jobs. That's audacity. That's chutzpah, right? Like, that's absolutely flying in the face as they cut public jobs and say, oh, there are too many consultants and so on and so forth within under Labour, coming in and immediately just giving these huge blowouts of public money to people who are going to sit on boards and do nothing and contribute zero to this country or to people,
Yeah.
to
And
humanity.
just like the way that the CAS report is being touted as being independent, these boards, these like reviews that the National Party are doing are just there to rubber
They're
stamp.
approval mills.
They're just there to give money away. The results are preordained. This board does not need to exist. These reviews do not need to exist because we're going to do it anyway. They just want something to point to and say, oh, look, they said it was a good idea. They said we should do this. They've been paid so much. Why would they tell a lie?
The people who are paid that much can't be incompetent, right?
And
That's how it works.
there's so much about, like, you know, cutting the numbers of people on JobSeeker, but it's like it's that's what, like, more than 10 weeks worth of a benefit for a person per a day to, I guess, say the charter schools, which fucking bullshit. And don't, I don't, I guess we swear on here. Like, this thing that we know is bad and doesn't, to sit on a board and, I guess, yeah, rubber stamp it. It's so much money.
I know that it's quite rare for people in middle, quote unquote, middle New Zealand or whatever to listen to the sort of niche left independent podcasting and media voice, right? But if you are listening with this sort of thing, or for people who, I mean, I'm sure that very few people would have voted National who kind of listened to this, but just generally, I'm sure everybody has friends. It is good to inform people who might have voted who are in, quote unquote, middle New Zealand, who sort of thought, ah, well, we all broadly believe in the same things like education. Well, the party that you voted in doesn't. They're dismantling public education. The very notion of charter schools itself is not necessarily to try to extract profit, but because you're placing control of education out of any sort of public accountability, because for all of the flaws that the state has, and we should dismantle the bourgeois state, right? Because it doesn't work. I think there is some modicum of accountability. There are some levers where people can, in some way, affect what goes on with education when it is public. And it is also for a particular ambit, which is, ideologically toward training a society of the majority of people to in a Fordist manner, that is in the same way as a factory division of labor structure, to be good and pliant workers. And that is not the ideal of the full flowering of humanity, but that is literacy and numeracy, and that is the ability to for people to be competent enough to have universal motoring, and that is the ability to have a society function as a society with glue and interconnection between people. And placing the power of that into the hands of private companies is a way of removing any and all accountability, that they can do these vast and unethical human experiments upon your children. Like, I am going to say, like, think of the children here, because really, that is a charter school can do within the bounds of certain kinds of regulations and certain kinds of lawfulness, a lot more of whatever the fuck it wants than your public education school can. Certainly a lot more. And the idea is to take these things out of public hands. And the shock and awe tactics are, and the speed with which they're running roughshod over the our kind of constitutional norms and processes in order to do this, is because they know it's unpopular, because people can't know about it, which again ties into dismantling media and the press and information flows, because if people don't know about this stuff, they won't resist and they won't object to it. But it is terrifying that they don't share. If you were a middle New Zealander and you voted for this, they don't share your values. They're not the same position in society as you. They don't care about you.
I guess we're wrapping up.
I wish I could do a Chris Bishop impression so I could talk about like employing that in the Snapchats of your daughter, the 16-year-old daughter's like
Oh my
Snapchat
God.
chats.
God, it's such a fucking bleak set of circumstances. Across New Zealand politics, we hate it every day. Thank you for reminding us once again, Simon.
Sorry.
That's been another episode of One of 200. Share, like, subscribe. Give us some money. It's all in the summary below, as per usual. I'll drop the transactional review link in there as well, so you can have a look at that and see just how bad the Cass report is before that news and narrative hits New Zealand's shores in earnest over the next couple of weeks. Get ahead of the curve. Also, get ahead of the curve just by listening to 1 or 200. Tell everyone you know. We are often months ahead of the political and news narrative. It's absurd, and I don't like that it's the case. It is worrying and bad that it is both this easy and this horrific that we can just say, hey, this bad thing's going to happen in a couple of months, and then it does. But we should it shouldn't be like that. But that's how it is right now. And if you want to be forewarned, listen to 1 of 200. We'll catch you on the next episode, whenever that happens
If
to be.
artifices are denied, living a pointless life, but learning all your lessons from your politics, there's no distinction. The words apart now is paid with good intentions. And I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say when they criticize a cost me ought to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day. This vindictive, forgetful fucking rain. It feels like we're on the road.